Welcome to the Contact Center Expert Show. This show is hosted by Nancy Monroe, CEO of Verbal Transactions, a voice enablement technology company. Join our discussion on how you can make your contact center a well-oiled machine.
Oh, all right. Hello, everyone. They are so excited today, you know, now that they don't have their masks on and they're still socially distanced from us, so I feel safe. But I want to welcome our guest today. Our guest today is Melissa Copeland, founder of Blue Orbit Consulting in 2004 to transform her experience as a leader and change driver into a resource for helping other organizations thrive. She brings a pragmatic approach with a spark, and the results in her wake speak for themselves. As a founder and principal of Blue Orbit Consulting, Melissa has honed a focus on transformation programs that deliver great customer interactions for her clients. Her clients benefit from Melissa's expertise in organizational transitions from company-wide platform changes to standardizing internal and customer-facing processes across market segments. But prior to that, she was a principal at Northridge Group, where she built a focused practice area in complex program management, scorecard development, pricing strategy, and channel operations. Her efforts generate client savings totaling over $750 million in cost reduction and significant improvements in both cycle time and customer experience metrics. She also previously worked for Quest, SBC Ameritech, and now AT&T in the U.S. and in Europe, leading programs including revenue-generating processes improvement and customer satisfaction across sales and service channels. But wait, there's more. Closer to home, Melissa has brought her energy and tenacity to launching the Northbrook chapter of Girls on the Run, an organization that inspires girls to be healthy, happy, and confident through the creative incorporation of exercise. She also serves on the Northbrook District Elementary School Board of Education and brings the same clear-eyed strength to every one of her endeavors. Whether meeting founders of one-on-one or orchestrating teams, she crafts for each project. Whew, wow. She is a go-getter, so I'm so glad you're on our show today.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. So just based upon, you know, your bio and your background, and when we previously spoke, I think now that, you know, people say, oh, we're coming out of the pandemic or whatnot, but I think what it has forced organizations into, is they had to just, like, rapidly, like, you know, get to the cloud or get off-premise or, you know, scramble because everybody started working remote. But what that really forced people into accelerating was their strategy around, you know, digital transformation. And so I think this is, you know, the projects that you seem to be working on recently. So why don't we just dive right into that, you know, maybe talk a little bit about, you know, some of the executives that you work with and, you know, what was their mindset around, oh, you know, we have to move everything remote. How do I do this? You know, and how do I get the organization resources aligned in that fashion? So maybe you could talk to us a little bit about, you know, some of the folks that you worked with and what their kind of their panic is, helping them get off the ledge, you know, so to speak.
Sure. I'd be happy to. So I think last year organizations fell into at least one of two groups. One group was those that were on the way to digital transformation already and just had to accelerate what they were doing. Then there was a second group of folks that had maybe not paid as much attention to modernizing their infrastructure and were really caught in a situation where they had to kind of flip the switch to be able to work remotely within a couple of weeks. In both cases, many of the executives and leaders of the business, I think, re-engaged with looking at kind of how culture was for their employees and the relationship between employees and customer experience pretty closely last year. And there is, I think, a lot of discussion and emphasis on how do we make things manageable for kind of people providing a great customer experience. This year, I would say many of the executives I work with have kind of moved back to looking at, you know, in the rush to move to digitized platforms or to be able to support remote work, I think one of the things a lot of organizations skipped is getting rid of what I'll call old work or old ways of working. So you moved your technology, but you didn't really look at what are your processes and what are your metrics, and are you still generating, to use a cliche, value in the same way? So some of the projects I've been working on this year have been partnering with executives to look at how do we get rid of old work, and if you invested in new technology, how do we optimize what you bought, and
right.
if you didn't invest
right.
yet, how do we make that transition as smooth as possible?
And when they were doing that, so you say old way of doing things. So do you mean, you know, how they're measuring, what metrics they're measuring results by, or is it by, like, I've seen some people challenge the CSAT scores, or, you know, are we measuring average handle time? Maybe we get away from average handle time. Are those some of the old ways of doing things, or maybe you can give an example of that?
Sure. So, you know, I think the easiest one to think about is if you implement a new cloud-based platform and you have a lot of automated capabilities. So let's say part of what you implemented has AI-driven quality monitoring. Many organizations haven't figured out how to use that. So you can reduce what I'll call your human workload.
Yes.
By
yes.
increasing the use of the capabilities of the platform you implemented, that doesn't mean you're reducing humans. You're just changing what the
right.
humans are doing
right.
so that they
right.
have more time to interpret the information or focus on the customer.
Mm-hmm.
From an agent perspective, I think, you know, often when you implement these platforms, especially if you're integrating with CRM, you should
mm-hmm.
see pickups. In reductions in handle time and reductions in after-call work.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not,
mm-hmm.
that's one of the things that, that we often help folks scrutinize is kind of thinking through
yeah.
what
yep.
changed about my work, or if it didn't change, why not? Is the agent still doing
mm-hmm.
things that they don't need to do anymore? Do they just need a break? Or what's going on inside those metrics?
Yeah, yeah. I love the example of the AI quality monitoring. We actually partnered with a company that built it because we have a, as you know, but me, some of our listeners know, we have a call center simulator. And what we do is we actually mirror the QA scorecard to the results in the simulator. You know, once people started to see it, they're like, oh, wait a minute, you can score somebody in the simulator just like if they were on a live call. Can you take your technology and automate the scoring of our live calls? And I said, well, you know, it takes a little more, I need more resources for that. Well, we found a company that did that. So I'm like, and so I went back to those companies to say, hey, guys, you know, you're asking me to do this. I have it. You know, but then they're like, oh, you have it. Oh, and then they're like, oh, gosh, I don't know if we want that. You know, so they're kind of backpedaling a little bit, which, you know, really kind of boggled my mind because I'm like, no, you can automate the monitoring of every single call. Why wouldn't you want that? You know, have you gotten any pushback on that too?
I think people react in a few different ways. So there's always an interest in kind of AI and what it can do. I think sometimes there's a gap between everybody understanding what it can do and then the in-practice reality of what people still need to operate
right.
versus what the technology can do for you. I think
right.
the other piece that's not well understood in the quality example, and Nancy, you may find this in the training world as well with the simulator, is while you can automate aspects of a function, there's still the in-person coaching and improvement that needs to happen. So,
right.
you know, I'm a big fan of you still need the relationships and the personal
yes.
touch around coaching
yes.
or teaching someone how to do it. You just don't have to do all of it. And so I think some of the AI applications get caught up in that. And even just terms like speech analytics, I'm sure you get this a lot
yep.
too. it means different things to different people. And so sometimes folks are thinking of speech analytics as just a voice-enabled IVR. Other people are thinking
yes.
of advanced speech analytics that are doing sentiment analysis and intent analysis and a lot of the other functions that some of the platforms can do, which is really a totally different application.
Yes, yes. We find that quite a bit. In fact, the in our simulator, we're like, you know, we're automating the observation of someone handling a call. But through our analytics, we can tell you exactly where somebody's getting off track. So rather than coaching them around the entire process, the AI is helping you, the coach, pinpoint exactly where that person needs your help and your coaching. And that's one of the things we point out to people to say, say you've got, you know, 500 people in a call center and a manager's handling, you know, 30, 40, 50 people or whatever. You don't have to sit there and monitor all of their activities. We're going to help you pinpoint just the very few ones, just like these quality monitoring systems. They pinpoint exactly where somebody might be getting off track, where maybe they're not cross-selling something, you know, well, or they're not stating the compliance statement, you know, word for word like they're supposed to from a legal compliance standpoint. And that helps you manage your time and where you need to coach versus, you know, trying to, you know, you get all these monitors and all these analytics and all these reports, and it's like overwhelming to people. Well, the point of AI and automation is to help pinpoint and make your job easier, not harder. So I think, yeah, you're right. There is confusion around AI and what it's supposed to do, and it's not necessarily removing jobs. You know, we say we're using AI to make human-to-human interactions better.
Yeah, I love that. And at the end of the day, it's what's really important is how can we get better information available more quickly so we can optimize the customer experience. I was at some meetings last week where one of the presenters was half jokingly, half not, talking about, you know, the purpose of IVRs is to make sure that you never talk to a human. And so along those lines, you know, when I think of AI, and I think there are situations where that is true. I'm not sure that's whatever, I shouldn't generalize, but I'm not sure that's what most intend when they implement an IVR. When done right, though, you know, that kind of automation with some of the AI and with, you know, sort of the training and coaching that we're talking about here, you can really deliver a targeted and terrific customer experience by just gathering some credentializing information from the the customer up front and then getting it to someone that can solve that interaction immediately is really an incredible opportunity. So many of the clients that we've worked with this year are very focused on that, which is how can we let customers solve what they want to solve themselves? Keeping in mind, I would say the savvier clients definitely have top of mind the acknowledgement that customers don't always want to solve everything themselves, but let them solve what they can or want to solve. And if they can't solve it or need help, let's get them to the right place as quickly as possible in the channel of their choice.
That's where
some of the AI is super cool.
It's interesting. I was building a simulation just the other day, and you know, you really have to think through the customer experience around, if you do start with an IVR first, it boggles my mind sometimes when you go through the IVR, you punch in your, you know, last four digits of Social Security number, and then you still get to a human being, and you go through that whole process again. It's like, no, there's technology that can accelerate this process. Why aren't you using it?
Yeah, you're so right. I can't help myself when I call in for my own, you know, experiences as a customer or when I'm working with a client and I'm checking what the experience is like. I think sometimes you bump into those things like there's old trees, if you will, out there that somebody forgot to update or clean up. Sometimes it comes up when an organization has insourced and outsourced. So overflow is going to some place where they're not the recipients of that information.
Yep. Yep.
Not to talk in too much jargon, but it is, I think, going to be one of the key areas looking ahead to 2022 is what I'll call that sort of cleanup or transformation that went with a lot of the work that was done last year. So if 2020 and 2021 were really, you know, moving whether they wanted to or not, and whether they were ready or not, to some of these cloud-based and digitized platforms. Looking ahead to 2022, the real opportunity is how do you make productivity more meaningful, you know, and efficiency more meaningful by letting go of old work.
Yeah, and do you find that there was some hesitancy in finding the budget for some of these things because they had all these sunk costs, you know, maybe they're on-premise systems, and now they're like, well, now I'm going to get dinged every month for these services. I mean, did you find people that were, you know, somewhat resistant to that because of the investment?
Yeah, I did and I do. It's one of the areas that we work in regularly is helping organizations that are thinking about the advanced capabilities they want to implement or what that transition looks like, you know, because, you know, whoever hasn't made the transition from a prem-based system to a cloud-based system probably has to do it in the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
But a lot of the work we do is helping them understand what the capabilities are that they have today and could have tomorrow, and then what does the money flow look like? So, you know, when you look at it, you have to look at the dollars and cents in a holistic fashion. And what I mean by that is it's not just the switch from investing in capital on prem-based equipment to expense on cloud-based services, but it's also looking at the ongoing maintenance, the associated equipment, the internal staff that you need. And so cloud-based solutions are not necessarily cheaper. I think with many clients, that's an assumption that we sadly have to debunk pretty upfront. But while it's not necessarily cheaper, what you get for your dollars and cents that you're spending and investing, it has much more depth to it than what you get with the equipment. And so the biggest challenge is coming up with a realistic transition plan for how you're moving from one to the other, particularly if you have outside organizations providing kind of maintenance or, again, more jargon, but the administration or the MACD of those systems.
Yeah, it's funny because I saw, I can't remember whose platform it was, but they had like this mini, I'd call it commercial on their website that talked about how they had a monitoring system that started getting calls in one region, you know, like their power was out or something like that, and they realized, oh my gosh, there must be a storm. So they were able to get ahead of the problem, you know, and serve customers that were in a region that was having some kind of technical difficulties. And so the, you know, the beauty behind having this digital transformation for them, or the example they were giving for this, you know, fake customer was, get ahead of problems. You can make customers happy. You can give customers a heads up to say you may be an area that may be experiencing blah blah blah, and we are fully aware and we're going to get to the bottom of it. So I think, you know, there's all kinds of analytics and data that allow organizations to optimize resources where they may not have been able to do that with their older systems. And it, you know, so I would imagine you're kind of developing some kind of initiatives around explaining that to the customers that you're working with.
Right. And the example you give is a great one. So I'm working with a client right now that's national in scope in the U.S., and they have contact centers, you know, in all over the country that serve different groups. They are in the process of transitioning to a cloud-based platform, and some of the things that are the most impactful for them right out of the gate, like the day we flip the switch, are the ability to change the messages in the IVR. They can do that instantly versus having to put in a ticket, wait a couple of days, make sure there's a recording, and so on.
Yep.
But, you know, the administrator can literally do that on demand. Same thing, if they need to spin up more agent licenses, or, you know, additional capabilities, they can do that in seconds or minutes, not days or weeks. And those are some of the simple things that are really exciting, that it can be hard to express it in just dollars and cents, but when you look at the impact of being able to maintain your service levels or being able to inform your customers instead of having, you know, a situation where folks are getting fast busies or can't get through or can't get information, there's incredible customer-oriented benefit there that we work with clients to kind of think through how do you size that and how do you capture those capabilities.
Right. Well, and redundancy, you know. I mean, if you were on-prem and you were hit by a power storm and your power's out, right? I mean, you hopefully have some kind of backup system, but this allows for some, you know, kind of redundancy system that you may not have had in the past.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. And one of the interesting, I think, angles on that is how many organizations, while they're looking at bringing people back into the office in different models, I think for contact centers, they are looking at some of the resiliency and redundancy that you can get from having a distributed workforce.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll always
mm-hmm.
have the risk of somebody's local broadband connection. But
right.
in the macro sense, you don't have the same concerns about an entire office going out,
right.
as an example.
Right.
You know, I think we've all lived through,
yep.
you know, the snowstorm of a century or something like that, where you had to close a center and send hundreds of people home and everyone else has to take the overflow. There's lots of new options that you can think about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in fact, I had a previous business that I owned, and then I sold it to one of my larger clients, and because I was one of the few technical people that they had on board, I took on the role as the IT person, which is not my background, but I did it anyway. I got everyone to move their file system to OneDrive in the cloud because you never know. And I said, you know, just make sure everybody's using, here's how you use OneDrive, step number one. You know, and I was telling the executives, make sure you're using OneDrive and putting all your files there. And sure enough, the CEO had a smash and grab of his PC. And he calls me up in panicked mode. He's like, my PC was stolen over the weekend. You know, you have it backed up? I'm like, well, were you putting everything in OneDrive? He's like, well, no. And then I'm like, no, then I don't magically back things up that are connected to the network, you know. And just, you know, lesson learned there. I mean, it's like, you know, you have to educate people around, you know, the technology and how to use it, you know. And I think, I imagine that's part of your project management of things when you implement them is teaching people how to use the technology to make sure that all the systems that are in place for backup and security work.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, we encourage clients when they're first defining kind of a project or if they're implementing new technology, when they're first kind of defining their requirements, to think about three stages of that. While they're shopping, right, while they're still framing it up front.
Mm-hmm.
One is the in the buying process, the implementation itself. So how yeah. does that need to work? What is the change management that you need? What is the training plan? What is the communication plan? How easy or difficult is it going to be? And how do you want to manage all that? So that implementation is one piece. The second piece that we really encourage thinking about is integration. So one of the hot topics right now is historically voice was, you know, or the platform that ran voice was kind of what I'll call the master, you know, and you ran other pieces next to it. That's
mm-hmm.
really changed in the past, I'd say, 2 or 3 years to where the CRM and text-based channels like SMS or chat can
mm-hmm.
go straight into the CRM, and then voice can run kind of over to the CRM.
Right, right.
And so thinking about those integrations, particularly contact centers of service and the CRM, and then any necessary connection like to a payroll system or to other applications
oh, sure.
and other stuff.
Yep.
So thinking about that, again, while you're shopping prior to the implementation so you can get it all blocked out. And then the third
yep.
area is really working on the support model. So not just
mm-hmm.
for go live and implementation, but what I'll call day two and beyond. And in that support
yeah.
model, how do you need to organize differently? What capabilities can you now do within your center's business operations
mm-hmm.
team
mm-hmm.
that you used to have to go to IT for? And what kinds of things can you send to the help desk that you maybe
yeah.
couldn't send to the help desk before? So there,
right.
there's lots of interesting ways to think about those changes and the training. And yeah, we absolutely look at all of them when we approach a program or a project.
Yeah, and then from a timing expectation, too, you know, people think, oh, it's digital. We'll just flip a switch. But no, you're right. I mean, all of those steps, you have to time box them around as well so that people know, okay, on this day we're doing this, and on this day, you know. And so it's sometimes, as they say, it's like herding cats, but you know, as long as people, communication around all of those steps is done well, you know, I think you'll get people on board faster.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think many clients have had discussions with the platform or application providers where they'll quote you an interval that really reflects their work, not the client organization's total work. So we really focus on working with clients so that they have an end-to-end understanding of everything that they as the client needs to do to achieve success, because it starts before you sign on the purchase order, and it continues after the go live. What we find is, you know, is an example with adult learners. So let's say they have a terrific training program. They've used a technology like what you offer with verbal transactions. They have coaching and other stuff. We still find with adult learners, depending on the complexity of the change, the short end would be 3 to 4 weeks on adoption. Typical would be 6 to 8, and really complex stuff could be 12 to 16 weeks. And many organizations, when they're doing their forecasting and they're planning for kind of incremental resources, if you will, to support the change, don't always have the point of view or the information about, hey, you know, it's not just go live for 2 or 3 days that we need to support. We really need a plan to hit this metric or achieve this result, and here's how we're going to do it. So those are some of the most interesting challenges to solve and think through.
Yeah, because, you know, I always get the question, well, how long does it take to build a simulation? And I'm like, well, you know, depending on the complexity, blah, 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 you know, a week to 2 weeks, you know. But what I in turn ask them is, you know, we always meet our deadlines. It's the customer we're waiting
right.
on, typically, to provide us with the material or the information we need to do our job, you know. So I always turn around and ask them, well, help me understand your internal process of once you get this in your hands and you get, you know, maybe the first group to go through the training, you know, what happens after that and what are your expectations around the data that we can provide to you, and et cetera. So you're absolutely right. And, you know, and it's taken, you know, even though I've been in the industry 30 years, you know, it took me maybe 10 years to realize, oh, I have to ask what's going on there. And I can give you this the next days, but this is just one component of something bigger, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. One of the things that we've been experimenting with for the past 2 years or so has been using or adapting agile methodologies for some of these projects. And the key parts of it are, you know, we're not trying to turn people into IT developers, but what we are trying to do is introduce the notion of sprints, the notion of, you know, new functionality is only as good as what you can demo quickly. So how do you get, you know, focused and ideally dedicated resources, piloting and iterating for quicker turnaround? And to your point, it sometimes we use the terminology, sometimes we don't even tell people that that's what we're doing. But the goal is to help clients achieve where they want to go as fast as possible.
I love that term, you know, agile methodologies. I may use that down the road if you don't mind, but it's like,
happy to.
We could probably spend a whole show
talking just about that.
absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's and that's, you know, that's one thing I always tell people, the advantage of working with a smaller company like ours, and I'm sure with yours too, is that, you know, we don't have these, you know, huge, you know, processes and teams and, you know, resources that we have to work around and, you know, we can, you need to do that today, or you need to change that today, or, you need this resource versus that resource. Sure, we can, you know, or once we see the results of maybe one small test or pilot, we're like, you have this challenge because it's COVID and everybody's not on the same network, so we can do, you know, provide you with X. So I love that term because, you know, we have that capability, and I'm sure you do and your team does, because you can kind of pull which resource you need at the time on a fly.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, for my last question here, you know, where do you see, you know, the greatest challenge going forward for the rest of this year and into next year for call centers?
Oh, good question. I think one of the biggest challenges going forward, looking into next year, is really how organizations choose to look at optimizing channels. And so, you know, people have different points of view about what the future is of voice. My point of view is that voice is here to stay. Voice is not going away. What we're seeing with voice might be that more complicated transactions continue to be handled by voice. And how do you staff to those different channels, and how do you meet customers where they are and where they want to be met? And I think you know, that's where many of the forward-thinking organizations, once you move past kind of survive to thrive, that's where the future is how do we meet customers where they want to be met?
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you being on the show today, and I think our audience, they loved it. You know, your insights are very valuable, and I the agile methodologies, you know, that may show up in a blog post down the road for me. So thank you for being our guest today.
Thanks so much, Nancy. It's a pleasure.